Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is drummer and musician Willie B., also known as Brian Wilson. Willie B. has recorded and performed with many great artists, including Sally Timms, Warren Zanes, Jamie Lydell, Nico Case, and our own Johnny Dowd. His versatility has led him into many genres, from punk to jazz to country. He is best known for the unique innovation of incorporating organ bass pedals into his drum set, allowing him to play bass and drums simultaneously. He will be touring Europe this spring with Johnny Dowd and his own musical enterprise, Czar, which also features Michael Stark. And welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Now, in your bio, you say that you were influenced at an early age by records by John Coltrane and Led Zeppelin and others. To tell us what captured your imagination about these records.
Well, Led Zeppelin thing is pretty obvious. I think to any adolescent boy that loves rock and roll, you know, the energy of it, the excitement of it. I discovered this John Coltrane record called Love Supreme, and I was waiting for my lesson at this drum shop.
Ah.
And they had, you know, they have the drum magazines, you know. And I saw this large, black, really dark man on the cover with these huge, bright white teeth just sweating buckets, you know, on the cover of this drum magazine.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh, who's this guy? He looks intense, you know. So I'm reading the magazine. I didn't really know anything about jazz, you know. And they kept mentioning this Love Supreme and going on and on about it and talking about the drumming and how innovative it was. And so I said, well, I got to check this out, you know. As a 12-year-old, you can imagine when I got home, I put that record on. It was like, flip my lid, you know. Like, what are they doing?
Oh, I can imagine, especially
but
first hearing
it. But it was something about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was something that was so intriguing. I mean, I didn't understand it,
uh-huh.
But I knew that it was as powerful as anything I'd ever heard.
Wow.
You know, I was listening to, like, you know, The Who, Led Zeppelin, all the sort of, you know, obvious rock,
That was in
high-energy
the...
stuff, you know. So that sort of grabbed me. I guess it was more the time period, but I started, you know, listening to early rap and hip-hop, you know, just through friends of mine that went to, like, breakdancing, you know. It's like, oh, I gotta check this out, you know.
Wow, I forgot about breakdancing.
Check out Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they had these raps about the horoscopes, you know. I got really into that, Curtis Blow, and, you know, all the early stuff that actually had musicians playing, you know?
Uh-huh. Innovative musicians.
Yeah, you know,
well,
you
yeah.
listen to those early rap records, they had disco drummers playing, you know, like the early, early stuff.
Uh-huh.
Came out of that sort of, you know, disco element, you know?
That beat, yeah.
Which I loved, and just the cadence of the rappers and the stories they would tell, and, you know, Grandmaster Flash, just the idea of him being innovative with very little, you know, a turntable. And a stereo, or a PA, you know, it was more like a stereo, you know?
Uh-huh.
That was sort of...
Those were your beginnings.
And I don't, you know, I mean, the threads through all that, I have no idea what...
Really?
What it was, but I just sort of, that's what, it, you know, that's all that was attractive to me.
Uh-huh. Well, tell us about the fact that you said at 12 you kept pestering your parents for a drum set, and you finally, you say in your biography that you made your own money and went and bought one yourself. Rebellion?
From my parent, you know, my parents were like, oh, he wants a drum set, you know? I mean, I bugged them for a drum set since I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old.
Really?
You know? So for Christmas, I would get a toy. You know, the first kid I got was this little toy, like Muppet drum set, you know? And I tore that thing up in about a week, you know? And then they, you know, next year they give me a practice pad, you know? And I think, you know, they wanted to see if I was going to stick with it, and then I got a snare drum the next year.
Uh-huh.
As far as the drum set thing, I think it was sort of like, you know, if you really want it bad enough, then, you know, get a job and save some money.
And you did it.
And end of that summer, you know, I mean, I worked with my dad, painting houses all summer. Both my parents are school teachers.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he would pick up work during the summer painting houses. So I worked with him. End of the summer, I came with, you know, $1,000, and I said, I want to buy a kit. So he said, all right, let's go down to the music store and bought the first kit that I saw, which wasn't a great, in hindsight, it wasn't the best kit, but...
Well, but it was a real one.
It got me going, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah. I bet your parents were trying to protect themselves, too. The thought of a little kid banging on drums in my house, you know?
I guess that was
How did they deal with that, though? I mean, where would you
practice?
Well,
luckily, my dad... I mean, my first band was with my dad and my brother, my older brother. My dad played guitar. I mean, he played, at the time, mostly acoustic guitar. Huh? A lot of traditional Irish music and folk. And he got an electric guitar when I got my drums. And that's kind of how I played, learn how to play rock and roll. We would play, you know, classic rock, Stones tunes.
So were you imitating a lot of people then, or were you already starting to do your own improv?
The first couple years, I was just sort of, you know, just play by ear and watch a lot of drummers.
I was wondering, how does one learn how to play the drums? Is it by just hit and miss and listening to other people? There's no real education in, you know, this is the step you... Is it? Is there?
Well, I sort of had the best of both worlds in that regard, in that I grew up sort of outside of Boston, and there was a lot of good drummers and drum teachers in the area. And one of the things, and my dad, his thing was like, okay, you can play drums, but I want you to take lessons.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, I'll pay for lessons, but, you know, you got to learn how to play your instrument. And so I started studying with this guy, Dick DeCenzo, who sort of, he had a drum shop in Quincy, Mass, sort of well-known teacher. And so, yeah, I started studying with him, and I guess that was maybe for 5 or 6 years.
Well, so when you say study, are they teaching you different rhythms? And how do you study the drums?
Well,
different
styles,
techniques?
Hand technique, how to read music.
Uh-huh.
Which is,
so you learn all
you know,
that as well.
Learning rudiments, I mean, the vocabulary of your instrument, you know. Uh-huh. Just like a guitar player would learn scales and chords and how to put them together. You know, the drum set is also a very physical instrument.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of it is, you know, learning independence and, you know, styles and learning sort of what to listen for. And I think the thing that he stressed, which I try to always keep in mind, is that, you know, think of music as a musician instead of as a drummer.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, you want to be a musician. You want to know what the piano player's playing and what the bass player's playing. You want to be able to interact with the other musicians and have a dialogue with them other than, well, musically, obviously. But, you know, to do that, it's as important to play, to approach your instrument with the same kind of respect instead of, you know, I mean, there's a lot of drummer jokes out there.
I bet a lot of people do think of it as a solo situation to be a drummer. And I think a lot of people probably think it's improv, a lot of it, you know?
And I think that's probably one of the main elements of jazz that attracted me. I mean, I don't consider myself a jazz drummer, but I'm definitely influenced a lot by jazz, the elements of jazz, what makes up what people call jazz, which is basically, you know, a complex sort of melodic and harmonic structures, improvisation within themes or forms, and experimenting within certain parameters, you know?
Yeah, I can hear the influence of jazz on some of the excerpts I've heard.
Especially the drummers, you know, they play a lot different than rock drummers.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, what? You know, when I heard Elvin Jones playing that Coltrane record, it was like, man, where's the backbeat, you know? Like, I don't hear any snare drum, you know? It's just like all these cymbals, you know? And it's like, oh man, he's moving the whole band with the cymbals, you know.
That is different.
When you
train your ear on that, you do hear different things. That
is really
interesting.
Amazing. Uh-huh. And to be able to drive a band with sort of the opposite approach to a drum set is rock and roll. Rock and roll, you want to hear the bass drum and the snare drum, the backbeats, you know.
Uh-huh.
You want to be able to feel that, you know, so to be able to dance. But, you know, with jazz, it just comes from a different part of the instrument that drives the band, you know, the ride cymbal patterns, you know.
That's interesting.
The drums actually, the actual drums take on more of the melodic end of things, you know, as far as rhythmic approaches and complementing whatever other instrument is playing, you know, piano or saxophones or trumpets.
Well, I want to play an excerpt from your own work. This is called Frame A. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I did a record by myself. It was sort of, I mean, it started with me just trying to learn how to write songs. You know, I had a small studio in my house. This was about 2000. And I played some of these tracks for Johnny Dowd, and he really liked them. And he encouraged me to, you know, make an album. So this is the first cut off of an album called Frame A.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of it.
Thank you.
You know what? It sounds like space music to me, or experimental music. It's very interesting.
Oh, glad you like it.
And you actually composed it, right? I mean.
Yeah, and I mean, the other element of that is it was sort of like the the process of me trying to figure out how to work different instruments, coming from a drummer standpoint. I mean, I had a house full of instruments. At the time, I was living.
So you played all the instruments on
it.
Let's make that clear to people.
Yeah,
yes.
On the record.
Uh-huh.
And I found myself living with this guy who was in the gamelan at Cornell. So I had these gamelan instruments. He played piano. Maybe two musicians living together in a house full of instruments with a tape machine. I figured, oh, how hard can it be, right?
are these like composed in stone, or were these all experimental and you just recorded them once and you couldn't replicate that?
No, I had a trio playing this music, actually. We played a handful of shows.
Oh.
And actually didn't play drums. Matt Sacucci Murano, who's another drummer in Ithaca, he played drums. And Stahl Queso, another great musician in Ithaca, played bass. And I played guitar and bass pedals and synths. So in that way, we were able to sort of cover all the parts. But it took me a long time to do this.
Oh, I'll bet
album,
it did.
Because it was trial and error.
Yeah.
And so, and also not having the same sort of proficiency on other instruments, it was definitely like, okay, take 20 on this.
Would you do this again? Or was it just a fun experiment just to see where you could go?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing that came out of that Willie B album was me realizing that it was an accomplishment for me to actually do this on my own, but that I enjoyed writing and recording with other people a lot more.
It's that collaborative
thing,
yeah. So
then I started this duo called Czar with Michael Stark, and that's
right.
Sort of how that happened.
Ah.
It was a fun thing to do, but I realized that the recording process for me now is it's more fun to do it with other people.
Oh, I'll bet.
You know, instead of by yourself. Because when you're by yourself, it's hard to have perspectives. Like, is that any good?
Yeah.
Six songs, but it ain't good.
Is this working? Yeah. Should I show this to anybody?
Right,
so. Tell us about your experience about drumming in regard to other people composing music. I mean, how is a drum pattern crafted? Does somebody who composes a song have it all written out for you, or do you experiment with them? And how do you do that?
Well,
I mean, you've drummed on Johnny Dowd.
I've had a lot of different kinds of experiences with that. A lot of people, I guess I'm kind of spoiled playing with Johnny Dowd, because, I think I'm going on year 14 playing with him.
You've been on many of his albums. What,
I've been
six
on
or
all
seven?
His records.
Uh-huh.
And his whole approach with me, as far as what he wants from the drums, is, kind of opposite what you think you'd want a drummer. Johnny's like, wants to play waltz on the guitar, and he wants to hear, the drums playing not like a drummer,
Or,
playing, he'll give me an idea, play like Jack DeJohnette on Miles Davis's, On the Corner.
So you have to know what these things are referring to, right?
Yeah, and that's, we know each other well enough that he can give me references, so I've had a lot of freedom with him, and he's given me a lot of room to sort of experiment. And he doesn't want to hear a boom chuck, boom chuck. Mm-hmm. He wants to be doing that, and he wants the drummer to be doing something else. So in that regard, I've been a little spoiled as far as, play this beat and don't move, which also has value as well. And I've had those experiences where, you're playing with someone and you're involved in a writing process, or you're coming in the studio just to record. Be like, play this beat and I'll play something that may deviate, and I'd be like, it might throw him off, or,
Oh, yeah. Some people do have something in mind,
Whatever is appropriate for, sometimes just laying down a really simple groove is not only appropriate, but really hard.
I'll bet it is.
And not to do anything else, but sometimes that's, it's called for, then that it works, and you know it.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Willie B., also known as Brian Wilson. He's a drummer and musician. And I want to play an excerpt from a different style for you. This is a song by Sally Timms called High Dosage. Tell us about this whole project.
Sally's amazing.
She is.
With people that aren't familiar with Sally, she was in a group called the Mekons, which, in my opinion, is one of the most overlooked rock and roll bands in the last 25, 30 years. Great band. Johnny Dowd, we sort of became very friendly with them, and we did a couple tours with them in the States. They asked us to come on tour with them. So we became very friendly. And then it was time for Sally to do a solo record, and she approached Johnny about it, with Johnny to produce it and to use his band, which is basically myself, Michael Stark, and Justin Asher.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to Ithaca, and we recorded it here. And it was a great experience.
Oh, I'll bet.
She's an amazing singer.
Yeah, let's listen to this excerpt from High Dosage.
sandpaper and twice as grating, giving the patient one hell of a dose. Ask me the question, but you know the answer. It rings in my ears and it clings to my clothes. The children and dogs always know. It's raining today and now my bones are aching, wanting to give them a taste of my boots. We live in a world that has no need for lovers. Take hold of your heart, pull it out by the roots. Yank it right out by the roots. It's better to leave all the bed sheets unturned. It's better
She has a great voice. She has a wonderful voice. And so was this one of those places where you were told to do a specific, or were you able to experiment with her? It sounds a little specific.
Well, actually, she wanted to do something really different. You know, she had done another record, Cowboy Sally. I think it was with the Sadies, a Canadian group, fantastic group as well. And I think it was a lot more straight down the line, sort of country covers. And But her song selection that she came up with was very unusual. And I think she wanted something different. She didn't want a straight ahead thing, you know? And we were totally up for it. And I think maybe she had to rein us in a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, because I think
the drums are really prominent in it.
I think she wanted something really different. I don't know if she knew what she was in for. But I thought the record came out great. A lot of the drums on that record, this tune in particular is a little more straight ahead on the drums, but on a couple of the other tracks on that album, World of Him, it's called, there's some tracks that are pretty free, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because she's not just one genre, obviously.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to be just like a folk
can croon,
or...
She
yeah,
can
exactly.
Punk rock, she can do, you know,
it's hard to place her, yeah, which is great. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great, except when you're trying to sell a record.
I know, everybody wants to put people in the box.
That's a tricky thing.
It is.
People don't want to take chances, you know?
That's right, especially in this economic climate. Now you're known for inventing a new technique, incorporating organ bass pedals, you know, with your drum set. To talk to us about that. Where did that come from? Was there something missing in the sound that you wanted to...
Yeah, I mean, I don't claim to have invented something new. I think I just put a new combination together.
Hmm.
I was really in this phase where I would listen to organ trios.
Organ trios, really?
Yeah, like jazz trios. Where you have like the organ player, like Jimmy Smith or, you know, Larry Young, these guys that would, the organ player would play the bass, all the bass line. There wouldn't be a bass player. And so they'd either play it in the left hand or on the Hammond organ, you know, they would have the bass pedals. And so I love that sound, you know. The sound is like, it's just big and fat, and it has a different tonality than an electric bass or even contrabass, upright bass. So I always loved that sound, and at the time, I think Johnny was sort of in between members with the band, and we never really had a proper bass player. We had, at the time, Mike Edmondson was in the band. He was playing bass on the Rhodes keyboard, which it's low, but it's not super low. And I just sort of had this idea, like, wow, wouldn't it be cool to have, like, organ bass pedals, you know? That would really fill out the sound, you know? And then I started thinking, well, I don't know, maybe there's a way I can put it in the setup. And, you know, I just sort of mentioned it to Johnny in passing, you know, not really all that serious about it, you know. And the next week he comes to the door, you know, with a set of bass pedals.
Really? And he said, do it, huh?
Yeah, it was like 3 months before a European tour. And I didn't know anything really a lot about music theory or anything, you know. So he's like, here you go, get to work. Here's a list of songs. We're leaving in 3 months.
Oh, God.
So I just shed it every day for hours. I mean, that was a time in my life where I had the time to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that tour, I sort of had to learn how to play it, you know, with the drums. So I would just, instead of playing a hi-hat cymbal with my left foot, I put the bass pedals in place of it. So I play the bass lines with my left foot.
God, that is unbelievable.
It's pretty ludicrous at the time. It was to think of, like, I'm touring Europe, and I don't know what I'm doing on this instrument.
And did it work? I mean, did you get it from the beginning, and you weren't blowing it or experimenting?
It really took a long time, you know.
That's
and
amazing.
For a lot of reasons. I mean, the obvious independence aspect of it, playing basically drums and bass, trying to make them fit together, and it was really good for me as far as like learning about music. What notes go in what chords, and what the bass player can actually play, and what actually would work in theory, but sonically may not work, because also the bass pedals has sort of a limited range. It's only one octave. So you can't, there's a lot of substitutions as far as like an electric bass player might play it like this line, but I can't play that note in that register because it's not there. You know, I have to play it lower. Sometimes it doesn't work with maybe what the guitar player is playing. Quarterly, you know, so that was sort of like an eye opener, and like
you must have loved that though.
Yeah, it was great, but it took a while, you know, and I finally got to a point where I felt comfortable enough that I mean that was like maybe 5 or 6 years later, and I had done a lot of tours with them, and still I was like learning as I went, you know.
Did you still use it?
Yeah,
that's still part of your repertoire.
Uh huh. And I played the bass pedals on the first Jamie Liddell tour that I did, which was. A little nerve-wracking as well.
I'll bet.
Because on that tour, we did a month opening for Elton John.
I was going to bring that up, because I want to play an excerpt from your piece with Liddell.
Yeah, and that was a real trip. That tour was like, it was real eye-opener, trying to play rooms that size, trying to play like hockey arenas.
And there must have been a challenge, too, to open for such a legend, too. I mean, they obviously are coming to see him. Did that make it a challenge?
Part.
Could you feel the vibe of that?
Totally.
Yeah.
And the first show, I was really, really nervous. You know, right before we went on, it was a huge production. I mean, this is like his Red Piano tour that he did in Vegas for like 6 months.
I remember
And he had like the Red Piano and all these props and this LED screen that was the width of a hockey arena. And they had like 40, they were traveling with 40 tractor trailers, and it was a huge entourage. And they travel with everything, the stage, the sound system, their own lights, everything. So it was a huge production.
And so how much time did you have for the opening?
Oh, we played about a half an hour.
Uh-huh.
And the first show, I was super nervous. And about the third song in, I realized it's
just like every performance.
It was a show. And especially these people, half of these people are looking at you or not looking at you. Like, here's the Elton John.
That's
they don't
right.
know who you are.
Yeah. So you could just
warm
up for yourself,
like,
yeah.
You know, wow, there's like 8,000 to 10,000 people that aren't really even paying attention.
Well, I want to play an excerpt from Jamie Liddell. This is called A Little Bit of Feel Good, and it's bluesy. It's different than some of your other stuff. Let's listen to an excerpt from it.
Sounds good, A Little Bit of Feel Good.
I love this kind of stuff. Was this an album that he cut, or was this just you on one song?
I think this particular cut is from, it was an iTunes festival in London,
okay.
And they recorded it live. I think they released it just through iTunes.
Uh-huh. Was this another case where you were able to innovate, or he had something in mind?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was from that sort of first tour that I did with him in 2008, 2009, where I was playing bass pedals. Because that's sort of what I think helped me get that gig. I think he was interested. We had mutual friends. He was living in Berlin at the time, and I had a friend, Andre V, a saxophone player, a friend of mine from New York that was living in Berlin, and they became friendly, and he had done this album called Jim. He had just put out this album. He was trying to put a band together for the tour. And so he was trying to basically assemble a bunch of different people, like characters, you know, instead of just like a stock R&B band, you know.
Right,
so
right.
Andre plays baritone sax and a MIDI saxophone with all these synths, and the guitar player, Taylor Savvy, bass virtuoso, played with Peaches.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And so he was, I think he was interested. I'm just like, oh, there's a drummer playing bass pedals. I'm going to form this band of, like, freaks, you know. And we had a great time.
Oh,
and Jamie,
yeah.
You know, he's really, he comes out of, like, a real heavy, deep electronic music background, you know. So he sort of built his own looper, you know, vocal looper. So it got a little crazy. The live shows got a little, there was a lot of sound going on.
I'll bet. I love that sound, though.
That's
I mean,
great.
The excerpt that we just
singer,
played.
You know?
Before we run out of time, Brian, I want to ask you, where did the Willie B come from?
Well, I mean, Willie
has
always been sort of a nickname of mine as a kid, you know, just from playing basketball on the playground, you know.
It's not from a middle name or anything, huh?
No, I mean, just from my last name, Wilson, you know. And I did this tour as a duo with Johnny Dowd, I think in 2004, maybe? In Europe, and it was the two of us. And the record company wanted to use my name on the poster, but for some reason they couldn't because for some legal, because I think like Brian Wilson actually has like
Boys,
a trademark
yeah.
on his name.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's true or not.
They might have mixed it up though, thinking it was him, yeah.
You know, so I came up with the Willie B. moniker.
That sounds like a perfect name for somebody who's a drummer, you know?
Yeah.
It's slick. And we are almost out of time. Can you give some contact information? Tell us if you're going to be playing anywhere this summer? Or?
Yeah, sure. You can probably get the latest info on my website. It's williebmusic.net. I have a tour in May with Johnny Dowd in Europe. And before that, I know I have a handful of shows with Czar, and another group that I'm playing with called Brian, which is a really interesting group as well. It's with Bubba from Ithaca Underground, and a friend Dave who plays amplified bassoon.
Wow.
Sort of an interesting project.
Uh-huh.
And I play oversized drums and gongs, and it's interesting.
And so people might be able to see
them.
You play this?
Yeah, we're going to play, I think, in Ithaca on February 24th, and that's at the space, at the Green Star Space.
Oh, nice.
And then I have a couple shows coming up with Johnny Dowd as well and Czar.
Great, great. Well, Brian Wilson, also known as Willie B, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having
me. This has been great. Thank you. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.